former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Lots of NFL talk ahead. The NBA postseason rolls on. We've got to decipher, one might argue, overanalyze some NBA insider tweets coming up in a moment as we welcome you into hour two of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. No Michael Lombardi today. Very grateful to have the one and only, the man, the myth, the legend, Will Hill, joining us, sitting in the seat for the 2 hours today. What's going on? Will, are you ready for hour two?
Yeah, hour one just flew by. I'm used to doing like 3-4 hour shows. So these 2 hour shows, you got it pretty easy with these 2 hour shows. Let's be honest. Whatever you're making is you're getting away with murder because these 2 hour shows are so easy.
So we open hour one with you critiquing the way that
myself.
I welcome you
I'm
to
sorry.
The show. I welcome you with rave reviews and you hit me with a you're getting paid too much for what you do. You've got life easy. Okay, so I see how
you
it is.
I'm
That's fine.
I'm gonna do this right now. I'm gonna officially redact that statement. I'm gonna withdraw the statement.
It's all right. Whatever I'm making extra, I'm throwing into the Kentucky Derby in the NBA postseason tonight. Does that sound good?
Yeah, but we talked about it in hour one. You're going to take the plus 220 chalk. I mean, I didn't view you. You don't come across as like a chalk eater like that. Usually, I think you'd be a little more adventurous, go down the board a little bit, double digit odds, but you're going to go chalk here 2-1. Okay.
Mike Somich made me some cash money homie on Mage last year. And if he says that fierceness is the way to go, then I'm going to trust him. Don't get me wrong. I'm still going to find a sprinkle of my long shot. Mugatu might not technically be in the field yet, but neither was Rich Strike when he won 2 years ago. So that's the long shot I'm throwing in there. I'll probably pick one more. But yeah, if Mike Somich says fierceness, I'm trusting our horse betting expert. By the way, thank you to Mike Somich. Thank you to Von Delzell for joining us in hour one. If you missed any of the first hour of the show, remember, you can always download it in podcast form. Speaking of which, Will Hill, also great host of the Shoulda Bet More podcast. He does the Bear Bets podcast with Chris Felica. Make sure you download, subscribe, do all those things. Anything new that you have on the pod coming up, by the way?
Recording with Drew Dinsick right after this Kentucky Great. Derby NBA playoffs. Had Brandon Anderson from the Action Network on the other day. So yeah, it's been fun. Got to have you on. I don't know why I haven't had you on yet. I got to, maybe if I keep being mean to you, you probably won't even come on, but, you hit on something though with Rich Strike being added that Friday, a couple years ago, make sure like, you know what you're betting. If you've been in these markets, like these horses, I think it was last year where a few of them got scratched the day before, 2 days before the Derby. Some of the books were refunds, some of them don't. So again, a lot of people, they're betting this a few times a year. Know what you're betting. Make sure you read the rules and just kind of act accordingly.
Yeah, great advice there. Absolutely. This is the most bet horse racing event of the year. One of the most bet events in sports, and always a good reminder too to know your house rules when it comes to these types of one-off things. But let's start off here in the NBA, Will, because a pair of blowouts last night. The Celtics with a rocking chair win and cover is a 14-point favorite against the shorthanded Heat, 118-84. More of the same for the Mavericks. Luka drops 35, 10 assists as Dallas tops the Clippers 123-93 despite being just a 2.5-point favorite. Both of those totals go over. Needless to say, I hope we get some more intrigue tonight, and it looks like we should.
Yeah, I mean, the playoffs, they've had their moments. Knicks, Sixers have kind of carried the first round, but other than that, it's been a lot of sweeps. It's been a lot of blowouts. I was looking at my phone, my clock last night. It was like 12:30 at night. I was like, you know what? I probably could have caught up on some sleep. It's hard with the NBA play, especially on the East Coast. These games go past midnight every night. Like I feel like once every couple of weeks, you kind of just have to punt and catch up on some sleep on the East Coast. Last night felt like a missed opportunity. Hey, it was 2-2. It was tied. You know, Clippers had played them well. Home court hasn't meant a lot. You just figure maybe it was a close game. And Dallas just completely ran over the Clippers, and they look like they're in good shape. I'd be surprised if they didn't close this out in six. Now, am I dying to lay 7.5, 8 points? In game six, I'm not, but I would expect Dallas advances here. And I think Oklahoma City is kind of the hidden winner here where they're just sitting back. They kick up their feet. They had a quick 4-round series that unscathed while Dallas, you know, Luka's beat up, dealing with a knee injury. They have to go at least six. Who knows? Maybe a seventh, probably not, but not impossible, where Oklahoma City can just have home court, be rested, and just wait for Dallas here. The other game, the other series, Boston-Miami. I mean, this is probably the last time we can talk about that. There's not that much that needs to be said. Last night was representative of the gap in talent. How Miami won that game, too, by just hitting a million threes uncontested. That was a fluke. That was an outlier performance, as Boston just a much better team. Miami not healthy. Even if Miami was healthy, Boston was going to beat them. So that was a blowout last night. The Heat team total under kept cashing for people. They couldn't score. Boston just a much better team. So now Boston awaits here, the winner of Cavs Magic. And Boston can rest up while Cavs Magic maybe go seven, and you know, we'll see the second round series start to begin here in a couple of days.
Yeah, it felt inevitable in Heat Celtics for sure. Seas, by the way, minus 210 to win the Eastern Conference, plus 130 to win a title. Miami made 23 three-pointers in their one win of the series. They combined for 21 the rest of the way, 3 of 29 last night. That game was over early in the second quarter. And then in this Clippers-Mavericks game, how about some of these numbers, Will? Just digest this. Just soak this in. And this is why I'm out on the Clippers, too, moving ahead to next game. I don't know how I feel about the 8 specifically, but I feel confident, like you do, that the Mavericks are going to finish this thing in 6. James Harden, 2 of 12 in the second half, 0 of 3 shooting with no assists, 3 turnovers. He now has the all-time record for most playoff games shooting below 20%. Paul George was 4 of 13. Russell Westbrook, 2 of 11. He, after going 5 of 8 in game 1, was 6 of 35 from the floor the rest of the series to this point. It's the worst field goal percentage in a 4-game postseason span since 1962, and they don't have their star Kawhi. It was historically bad. And while I don't think it'll be that bad in game 6 coming up, I don't think there's any saving them necessarily in the series against the Mavericks. Even with Luka dealing with injury, he comes out and shoots 35.
Yep, I'm with you. And it's hard to tell how hurt Luka is when he's hurt, because he plays so slow, so deliberate anyway, where it's hard to tell. Is he lumbering? Is he hurt? Or is he just fine? He plays at such a deliberate pace. But I think there's a bigger picture question here, a bigger issue. And that is the Clippers. We talked about the Suns in the first hour. You throw the Lakers in there. A lot of these teams are older. They went all in for draft picks. And you look up and not only are we not winning the championship, not only are we not in the finals, we're not in the conference, we're losing in the first round. And we have older teams. We're committed to these older guys. Like, what do? You go into next year, if you're the Clippers, say, all right, you know, this will be the year Kawhi's healthy. We're going to break training camp in September. And we're going to be the last team standing holding up the trophy in June. And we're going to be healthy the whole time. Seems like not just a bad bet, it seems almost impossible now for some of these teams, like the Suns. Where do you go if you're the Suns? The Lakers have an older roster and they have some picks to deal, but I don't know. Do you think we see one of these stars get traded? Do we see a little dust up? Because it's been kind of quiet the last year, year and a half, where we had that 2 or 3 year period where these stars were changing teams every couple of years, every couple of months, pretty much. It's been quiet. I wonder if we get a little dust up where some of these teams say, you know what? I have an older team. I don't have my picks. I got to do something here, because if you're the Clippers, you're some of these other teams. I don't know where this is going.
Everybody's trying to make their big three, although none of them seem to be quite working out the way that any of these teams would hope. But I honestly would not be surprised. I hope that's not the case. Like, I would love to just see them run it back and be healthy and have everybody go together. But it seems like definitely one of these stars is going to be on the move, and certainly some of them throughout the course of the NBA.
And they paid Kawhi. It can't be Kawhi. So yeah. I think Paul George could be a free agent, has a player option, where maybe Paul George says, you know what, maybe I'm just better off going to Philly, going to Orlando, a young up and coming team, just getting out of here. Because I mean, we all love Kawhi. He's great when he plays, but I think this is since 2017, twice he's finished the season healthy twice. Gross. And one of those is 2019, where he's holding up, you know, the trophy at the end with the Raptors. So it's just it's interesting. It'll be an interesting offseason for sure.
Gross. We have two potential closeout game sixes tonight. Again, not a stretch to say that we should have more entertaining action on the court tonight. We have the 76ers at home laying 3, total 201 against the Knicks after, you know, staving off elimination yet again. The Bucks did the same last game. They're getting 6 in Indiana, total 217. And this market has been moving around like a little bit of a roller coaster after an Adrian Wojnarowski tweet that Milwaukee's Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard are both working to try and make a return against Indiana for game 6 tonight, but still unclear if either will be able. Bucks are trailing 3-2 in the series. So all facts that everyone knew prior to the tweet, yet we saw this line go from 8 down to as low as 5. Now it's back middling at 6. The total has seen nothing but steady action to the over. I saw 212.5 this morning. Now it's up to 217, Will.
Yeah, let's just take it back to after game 5. What was it, Tuesday night? Doc said after the game, remember he had that quote, they're both very, 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 he threw in 3 varies, close to playing. And the market didn't blink. It was 9, where he's like, wait a second. If they're actually, you know, at least questionable 50-50 to play, this number shouldn't be 9, because if those guys are playing, okay, they haven't played in a while, maybe they're rusty, maybe they're banged up, but it shouldn't be anywhere near 9. Now it's kind of in between, where 6 is, okay, I think that's a representation of a 50-50 if they play. It's very hard to sit there and try to decode that tweet of maybe, it's basically saying maybe they will, maybe they won't. I don't know. It's hard to bet this game without having a feeling. I kind of get the sense one of them plays. I get the sense Giannis does play. We're past the timeline now. Remember, a lot of people thought game three, game four of this series, he could be back. He's been a fast healer. So I get the sense Giannis plays, maybe Dame plays. I'd be inclined to take the six. But again, this is not really a basketball handicap as much as you're handicapping if you think these guys are going to play here.
I know that these are sacrilegious, but I placed a same game teaser this morning on this game. I know.
I know.
Okay. But like looking at the numbers now, I feel pretty good about it because I have the Bucks plus 13.5 and over 208.5. So where these numbers are sitting now, the way they've been bet up, I'm just like hoping one of them plays. You anticipate the Pacers, who have been playing and scoring at a much higher rate at home, continue to do that. Bucks keep it close. I feel good about it. I know that teasing totals is disgusting, especially in the NBA, but you're just going to have to let me have it. Any early thoughts here before we hit the break on the 76ers?
I will say this, one early thought. You're one of the most famous, one of the most likable people in all of sports media. Don't you have some people that you can text for insider information? Hey, what do you got on Giannis? What do you got on Dame? Can you get the scoop for us?
The only series I have the scoop in right now, which means nothing, is the Cavs Magic one because I have a friend who's a reporter in that series. But that's all I got for you. I'm sorry. I'm not cool. But that's very nice of you to compliment me after all the haterade you've been sipping and spewing my way today.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you could get some information if you really wanted to. And you're kind of bailing on us. It's not, I mean.
So, and there's the critical again. So it's, you know, you can't not do it. It's all right, Will. We've got lots more fun coming up over the course of the next hour. I'm going to force Will into another game show type segment here shortly. And lots of NFL draft still to recap with Josh Edwards of CBS Sports. Stick around. We're just getting started. Hour two of the Lombardi Line. Need a one-stop shop for all the best betting information, look no further than VSiN and a VSiN Pro subscription, your ticket to Insider Insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies. For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. It's normally $240. You can grab it now for just $199. And if you sign up today, we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use the promo code Lombardi. You know that your cup of coffee every single day is more than 50 cents. This is the deal of all deals. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see who has the best bet, win percentage, and ROI. 19 hours of live programming each and every day, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems from professional handicappers, and our exclusive betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. VSiN.com/subscribe, but you got to use that promo code Lombardi. And am I wrong, Will? That's such a 50 cents a day. 50 cents a day.
When you phrase it like that, it's totally different than, hey, 199, 50 cents a day. I mean, that's, you find that change in your couch cushion. So that is a very good sell. It's a very accurate depiction by you. And by the way, I got to give you more praise too. Just to be fair and
balanced
here.
This needs to end.
I was listening to VSiN.com and you're on one of these commercials and it was, I think, you know, for being a VSiN member, and you keep chiming in, oh, I'll bet on that. NBA Finals, oh, I'll bet on that. So that is one of the best commercials on VSiN.
Thank you. It's the little things, you know. I do whatever the brass is asking me to do, and I bet a lot of random things. So living my dreams one step at a time, Will. I can't take whatever. I don't know what's gotten into you today. Did you have too much coffee? Did you use that 50 cents on a couple shots of espresso? What's happening here?
I had a bigger one from, McDonald's has really underrated coffee. So I did have one. I could go for another one again. I stayed up too late watching these NBA games. NBA games starting to catch up with me a little bit. So I'm a little, I'm a little sleep deprived, I think.
I've never been a McDonald's coffee person, but for a long time I would get the big, like gigantic dollar sweet tea. Is it still only a dollar or is it more expensive now? Do you know?
For the sweet tea or for the coffee? Coffee is reasonably priced. Coffee's like a couple bucks. So coffee, it's a good deal.
Just wondering. Let's get into a little NFL talk here because now that the draft is in the rear view, this is the first time I've had the opportunity to check in with you, get some of your thoughts. Is there anything, once you pair up like the initial start of the offseason, right? You have coaching changes, you have free agency, then you have the draft. Anything move the needle enough for you with that combination of factors to place a bet or two?
Couple things. I had Brandon Anderson on my podcast the other day from Action Network, and he made a good point in the lines already kind of corrected where, hey, the Cowboys should not be ahead of the Eagles in terms of the odds. Cowboys, from what everyone says, did not have a good offseason. Again, I'm not an expert on all these fringe players, free agents, draft. That's why, you know, Lombardi's great with this stuff because he, you know, he watches the film. He's very knowledgeable on Super Bowls. I'm just a better. But the Cowboys really didn't add anybody, and they kind of, they're bringing back Ezekiel Elliott. Meanwhile, people love the Eagles draft. There's a sense that, hey, they addressed some of their issues. So right now at DraftKings, both plus 130 to win a division. I think the Eagles should probably be shorter than the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not a huge edge, but just doesn't it feel like this division kind of flips every year too, where nobody ever goes back to back. It feels like Philly had a better offseason. Philly maybe gets back on track. So that's one. And again, this is one where I think the narratives are so important. Bears at 8.5. Everyone loves their draft. There's so much optimism with Caleb, with Adunze, with the defense. They played well second half last year. And this happened with the Eagles last year too, where everyone loved their draft and they were at 10.5. And that ticked up. Eventually it closed 11.5. And if you remember, they landed 11-6. So if you bet the over early, you won. If you bet the under late, you won. I think this Bears total keeps creeping up 9. I don't know if we get to 9.5, but if you like the Bears, again, you're talking about tying up money for a long time. Mm-hmm. But the number matters, where I think if you like that over 8.5, it's not a bad idea to just bank it now. I do think that closes 9. There's a possibility it closes 9.5.
It is interesting how quickly narratives can change and thoughts can change, because this is a 7-win team a year ago. There was a thought that had the defense not made the improvements despite the games that they lost down the stretch, that Eberflus would have been fired after this past season. But now there's all this hype around the Chicago Bears, and they are one of the top 5 teams right now that's being bet, according to DraftKings, in the Super Bowl odds at 30-1. The first team that you mentioned there, in the Philadelphia Eagles, they are the most bet team since the end of the draft at 17-1 odds, 21% of the handle, 12% of bets coming in on Philadelphia. And that's a team that, to your point, you can certainly see why when you think about the free agency additions of Saquon Barkley providing a little bit of help there, Bryce Huff on the defensive side of the ball, and then you need corner help. You got it. Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean at the top of the draft here. The Chiefs, I did think was interesting too, that they haven't really done a ton, but they're clearly on a mission to three-peat. They're the shortest shot on the board. They leapfrogged the San Francisco 49ers, who were an early favorite coming off of last year's Super Bowl, plus 550, 14% of the handle, 15% of bets on Kansas City to make history.
Yeah, I wonder why that is, because they did get Worthy, and people say, you know what, they're trading up for Worthy. Maybe it's just the fact that you give Mahomes at a long price, and people are just saying, you know, I'm done overthinking this. It's Patrick Mahomes. He's the best quarterback in the league. He's maybe the best quarterback of all time. What am I doing here? I'm going to take the Chiefs. So maybe it's a combination of that, and you know, people think Worthy will make an impact right away. They got an offensive lineman, what was in the second round, that people thought might go in the first round. So I think it's people just saying, you know what, I'm done betting against Mahomes. I'm going to join the party here. I'm just going to bet on the best quarterback. How about you? Has anything changed for you?
I feel like I have like very common thoughts with a lot of folks. Like, we had a pair of guests that came on the show yesterday, and I mean, even Von Dalzell, who was talking NBA, but he's a Steelers fan. He said that he really liked what the Steelers did in their draft. Like, the Steelers are a team that I've thought for a while has a lot of upside. I feel like I always catch myself believing in them, and then they kind of bite me in the butt. Although your cash in season win totals over on them with Mike Tomlin every year, and if they really are getting better, I like that. I really like Philadelphia. And the one team that I'll never get on board with is the New York Jets. And that's one that I feel like no matter what they do, and even though I think that they got the first pick in the draft right going offensive line instead of taking the toy and the weapon in Brock Bowers and taking a tight end, I still just think that they're going to find a way to mess that up. And I don't agree that they're going to be able to stay healthy. I just find that to be an unrealistic proposition with the weapons they brought in, although certainly they are weapons and they're very talented. But, Will, this would not be an hour on the Lombardi line if I did not quiz you and I did not give you some game show options. So these last 4 minutes or so, I'm going to hit you with Bettor's Choice and Would You Rather rookie props coming off of the draft, rapid fire style. Feel free, though, to give a little analysis and your thoughts. We are going to start in the offensive rookie of the year market. Would you rather take 6-1 on Marvin Harrison Jr. or plus 650 on Jaden Daniels as offensive rookie of the year in 24?
I would have to go Daniels, just because this tends to be a quarterback award. I remember Jefferson put up record-breaking stats. He still didn't win it because Herbert was there. So Harrison, I think, will be really good. There's some buzz for this Cardinal team, who was feisty last year, but I would just go with Daniels because I think this is a quarterback award.
And to your point, like, I was going to say, an Ohio State player has won one of the Rookie of the Year awards 6 times since 2006. But Stroud, of course, being like the quarterback most recently who won them. Then it's Garrett Wilson, Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, Marshawn Lattimore, Chase Young. Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously another Ohio State guy who would like to be that piece, but I think if there was one player you had to pick between, I would say Jaden Daniels as well. How about Quinyon Mitchell, we just talked about, newest addition to the Philadelphia Eagles at 10-1 for Defensive Rookie of the Year, or Jared Verse at 11-1?
I like Verse. I thought that was good value with that pick. Rams should be good, have some lead. So I will go with Verse here again. I don't know, like 11-1, would I actually bet it? I'm not sure, but you know, sacks are a big stat when it comes to this award. So almost like the quarterback of the defense, where if you can just look at the sack leader, a lot of times that's the guy that's going to win. So I'll go with Verse here.
Speaking of sacks, who do you like to have more? Dallas Turner to go over 7.75 sacks at even money, or Leiatu Latu to go over 7.25 at even money?
Wow, 7.25. That's an interesting number. I will go Turner. A lot of people thought best player in the draft. You're going to put him in Flores' defense, a very aggressive defense, a lot of blitzing, a lot of pressuring the quarterback, the crowd noise in Minnesota. So I will go Dallas Turner. I actually like that one.
I don't have a firm opinion on this either way. I just know the Colts really, really need a guy like his help. And so hopefully he does produce. They've had one player with double-digit sacks over the last five seasons, Justin Houston in 2011. How about Roma Dunze, over 700.5 receiving yards, -125 the price, or Brock Bowers over 650.5?
I would go Bowers over just because it was such a strange pick. They already had a tight end. They almost have to justify the pick by feeding him the ball. Plus, they're going to have, you know, either a young quarterback or just an unestablished, not very good quarterback. And the easiest friend for a quarterback is, when they're not very good, is just dump it off to the tight end, safe throw. So I will go Bowers over. Bowers, I think, will be a good pro too.
Okay, let's look at a couple longer shots here. Malik Nabers to have the most receiving yards at +550, or J.J. McCarthy to have the most rookie passing yards at +350.
I'll just take the longer number with Neighbors. I figure they'll be losing a lot. Now you worry about Daniel Jones throwing balls at his feet or over his head, but at +550, I just don't know that the Vikings are going to ask McCarthy to throw the ball a lot with their defense running game. He does have the two good receivers. I'll just take the longer number here at Neighbors.
But are we even going to be asking J.J. McCarthy to throw the ball at all? Isn't Sam Darnold going to be the guy that we're assuming should start right away and give J.J. McCarthy time to sit back and learn? Am I crazy with that?
The market certainly doesn't think so. McCarthy's numbers are 3,000 for passing yards, which is a little surprising. I think it's McCarthy's job, but maybe he has to earn it. We'll see.
I would be like, I look at any of those J.J. McCarthy numbers and I would be targeting unders just because I think even if he plays, it's not going to be from day one. So the games are going to be limited. I don't know. We're going to hit the break here. Let's recap the draft a little bit more with Josh Edwards, CBS Sports NFL draft writer. He's going to join us next, get some of his draft grades and thoughts on the teams looking ahead. We'll be right back. If you haven't checked out VSiN.com yet, now's the time. It's a fully loaded one-stop shop for all things betting. You want daily plays or series bets for the NBA and NHL postseason? We've got you covered. Same thing with best bets and in-season futures opportunities in Major League Baseball. Plus, with the draft in the rear view, we're not giving you draft winners and losers, but individual team and division breakdowns examining how the draft may impact market shifts and teams or players getting bet. Plus, if you like listening to this show, you want all the Lombardi Line content. Our own Michael Lombardi puts out weekly columns on VSiN.com this week, talking about just that, which NFL teams are actually worth a look in the futures market, because football teams on paper never play as well as teams on grass. VSiN.com. Check it out today. In for Michael Lombardi today, the one and only Will Hill. I'm Stormy Bonantoni as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And let's talk a little bit about some of those teams that might have improved their stock going into 2024 as we welcome in Josh Edwards to the show on the Progressive Guest Line, CBS Sports NFL draft writer. You can follow him on X at EdwardsCBS. Thanks for joining us. Now that you've had some time to wrap your head around the weekend that was the draft, you put all of this work and time and effort into it. Now that it's in the rear view, how are you feeling? Like, are there some teams that you really, really ended up liking what they did?
Yeah, I do. And I think you have to take a look at everything contextually. Because there are some teams that are more ready to compete right now. Some teams are building for the future. And I think you saw that in the way certain teams navigated. Carolina had a very clear strategy, adding more to the offense. Of course, going out and get a guy like Jadavian Sanders. They got Jonathan Brooks, the running back, there in the second round, I believe, on day two somewhere. So they got pass catchers for Bryce Young, because obviously that was the issue this past year. Washington, they took a defensive tackle in the second round, even though they've got Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen. So obviously a little bit of a nod towards the future, perhaps. There was a lot to take away from this draft. And we're going to be talking about it for quite some time because we've got six quarterbacks in the top 12 overall.
Josh, I want to stay on the quarterbacks. Nick's going round one in Denver. It seemed like as the draft approached, that was likely that Nick was actually going to go round one. Do you buy it? Do you think in that conference, all these great quarterbacks, that Nick can actually hang? What are your thoughts here on the Broncos going into the season?
I was not a supporter of Nick's going in the first round. I thought he was more of a day two talent. I understand the situation there in Denver, of course, needing a player that can come in and upgrade that room right now. They only had Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson. So bringing in Bo Nix at least gives you some hope for the future. I don't think he's the same caliber of prospect as the first four guys in this class that we would have talked about. So that was a little bit underwhelming for me. And then they spent the whole afternoon or the entire, couple of hours after their pick trying to convince everybody that it was the right decision. There was a PR move on social media, where they were trying to get everybody on their side, curry public favor. So I think when you have to go into that damage control mode right after you make your pick of the presumptive quarterback of the future, that's always a little bit alarming. But I think he does give him a better opportunity for the coming season. I just don't think it moves the needle that much in that division, considering you do have Justin Herbert. You do have Patrick Mahomes there, of course, at the top of the division.
I want to follow up there on one sliver of what you said when you mentioned the top four quarterbacks. When you say that, do you mean J.J. McCarthy or do you mean Michael Penix Jr., who ultimately ends up going number eight overall to the Atlanta Falcons? That was such a surprise of the draft, but who were your top four?
Yeah, I did not see that coming. That was certainly a surprise for me as well, but that's what made this year so fun. The first four for me in order were Caleb Williams, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, and then Jaden Daniels. So I did not have Michael Penix in the top four. Of course, he did get in there ahead of J.J. McCarthy. I just think Penix, he has shown the athleticism. He's shown the foot quickness to get out in space and make plays when necessary. But I think his very strong inclination to make plays from the pocket is a little bit limiting for what offenses are trying to do today. If he's going to lean into that and be more of a dual threat type quarterback, I would like his ceiling a lot more just based on what I've seen at Washington coming off multiple torn ACL injuries. That gives me a little bit of a concern about just how willing he's going to be to extend plays and make plays out of structure at the next level, which is something that we've seen the best quarterbacks in the NFL do over the past couple of years.
Josh, I think a reason that these quarterbacks maybe went a little earlier than we expected because the quarterback class next year doesn't look as great. It's never too early to start looking at next year. Sanders was the short shot to be picked first overall. There's been some tweets the last couple of days between Deion. Just give me your thoughts in general with Shador, his reputation around the league, and just some thoughts on next year's draft.
Yeah, I think most people have a pretty good impression of Shador at this point in time. Obviously, being Deion's son, he does not lack confidence. And the back and forth tweets that we've seen on social media the past couple of days have not exactly been a glowing example of that Colorado program right now. But he is an incredibly talented quarterback. He started the year off very well, kind of faltered there in the second half of the season, similar to the entire program. But he is going to be in the mix for quarterback one in 2025. I happen to favor Georgia's Carson Beck a little bit more at this point in time. I think Drew Aller at Penn State, Cade Klubnik at Clemson are a couple of guys that certainly have the talent and the capability to be in that conversation. But I think given what we've seen the past year, we're probably looking at Beck as the favorite with Sanders a little bit behind him. But we always see somebody pop up throughout the course of the process, whether that is a guy like Zach Wilson or this past year, whether that is Michael Penix or Bo Nix asserting themselves, Jaden Daniels really coming into the year. We didn't have any clarity on what this quarterback group was going to look like. And then we're talking about an NFL record six being taken in the first round. So plenty of time for all that to change, but I think Beck is probably my personal favorite to be quarterback one next year.
In the top 12, we saw those six quarterbacks, which then brought all of these stud defensive players, some of which we thought could be top 10 picks, down. Are there any teams that you think really got excellent value, potential studs of the future on the defensive side of the ball later in the draft?
No question. And seeing Minnesota being a little bit aggressive, going back up and getting Dallas Turner, similar strategy employed a year ago when Houston moved back up to get Will Anderson Jr. after taking C.J. Stroud. Minnesota did the same thing this year. Obviously, they hope that it works out as well as it did for the Texans, but that's what the coming season is to figure out. I think the Lions getting Terrion Arnold there at the end of round one was not only sensational value, but it was the ideal scenario for both the player and the team. Because Terrion Arnold is a highly accountable, tough, competitive kid that's now going to step into a position of need for a potential Super Bowl contender. And they were able to do that at the end of the first round. You look at the Eagles getting Quinyon Mitchell at 22, I believe it was. He was my top-rated cornerback in this draft class. I couldn't tell you the last time the top-rated cornerback has lasted until 22 overall. But then to follow up and get Cooper DeJean there in the second round, I think, was just capitalizing on the value of the board. And I think being the Eagles, who I think set the record for the most trades in the NFL draft, having that roster and given the flexibility to make those moves, not feeling like you have any desperate needs, allowed them to really take advantage of how the board fell.
We're a week past the draft. Are people still as shocked by the Penix pick at the time as they are now?
I think time heals all wounds. So there's definitely less harsh opinions about that decision, but I will say it was confusing nonetheless. You know, he's almost 24 years old. I believe he turns 24 years old in May. He has played as many snaps or more as the other top quarterback prospects in this draft class. So he's not necessarily someone that needed to come in and sit for a year or two. You just signed Kirk Cousins to a massive deal, and now you're putting him in a position to be the mentor for the guy you just drafted number 8 overall. And Kirk Cousins' contract probably means he's going to be there for a couple of years. So you're looking at Michael Penix Jr. possibly being 26 years old by the time he gets meaningful snaps as Atlanta's starter. I understand their thought process as far as we don't plan to be picking in the top 10 over the next couple of years. I get that. I just don't understand the execution of it and how they ultimately landed on Penix, because I don't think that that was the best outcome for the player or the team.
Completely agree with you, Josh. Thank you so much for the time. Appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Josh. Thanks, Edwards, Josh. Doing great stuff over there for CBS Sports. And yeah, the thing that, Will, I keep on walking away from with this Atlanta Falcons thing is, if you really wanted to win now and you're investing and you believe in this team, and like, that's just not what you do with a top 10 pick. I don't know. We can dissect that a little bit more on the other end of the break and give out our best bets for the day as well as we close out this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line as we wrap things up. Remember, don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From now through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the code VSIN. New customers that do bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code VSIN, V-S-I-N, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Alongside Will Hill, Stormy Bonantoni with you, and we will give out our final thoughts on the two games coming up tonight in the NBA in a moment, but I want to carry over some of the conversation that we were having a little bit ago with, as it pertains to the NFL draft and Michael Penix Jr., because again, well, this is like my first time that you and I are getting to go back and forth on this a little bit. What was your reaction, and now that you have really had the time to let that simmer, what are your thoughts on the Falcons moving forward with that pick in mind?
I wasn't high on the Falcons going into this season, and I am less high now. I like them as an under. They opened 10.5, which was way too many, way too much respect for Kirk Cousins. Even at 9.5 at plus money, I think the under is a good bet. Cousins coming off an injury. Cousins is an older age. That's not a great defense. Plus, you had a top 10 pick, which, hey, you can add a receiver, an offensive lineman, a pass rusher, somebody that's going to help you win games this year. Now you're probably get somebody that's not going to help you win any games this year as long as Cousins is healthy. I guess, hey, if Cousins gets hurt, you have a nice insurance policy. If Cousins is bad, you have a nice insurance policy. But look, as bettors, who cares about 2-3 years from now? We're trying to win bets for this year. And for this year, it really downgrades the team.
And you immediately have the leaks coming out from Kirk Cousins' agent during the draft saying he's blindsided by this. He had no idea this was coming until they were on the clock, which then is a bad look, too, after you sign this guy and you expect him to walk into a new locker room and become a leader with his heir apparent sitting right behind him as well. And obviously, he's an older quarterback. Obviously, he knows that he's not the franchise future, right? But to have it go down that way feels like it's bad form for a team that you do have high expectations for in winning now. And you're just sending a bad message, I feel like, to him. You're sending a bad message to the team. And I feel so much for Michael Penix Jr. specifically in this spot. I talked about it a lot on the show yesterday, Will. I want to see Michael Penix Jr. play. I am a fan of his after seeing what he's done each of the last 2 years at Washington. He is one of the most, if not the most, ready to play now quarterbacks that were drafted just now. And the fact that he's older and mature and he's going to be sitting on the bench for, barring injury, 2-3, Terry Fontenot says 4-5 years, like, that's not a good thing.
Very strange. It'll be interesting to see it play out because, I mean, it's going to start early. We have so many of these reporters now at training camp. Hey, Penix had a good day at training camp.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, God forbid he throws a touchdown in a preseason game. Hey, are we sure Penix should just win the job outright? Are we sure Cousins is better than him right now? I mean, they're just setting themselves up for for a lot of distractions, for it's really just a strange situation they put themselves in. Again, you'd rather have two quarterbacks than one or none. I get that. And that's one position where it's so valuable where, hey, if you have a second good one, that's a good problem to have, but it is still a problem. And, Penix, if things go well with Cousins, isn't going to help you win games this year. So to me, the Falcons are an under.
Will, you're going to hear that constantly throughout training camp, especially when your quarterback's coming off of a torn Achilles. Like,
right.
What are we talking about? Like, you're going to – go ahead.
No, plus Cousins is older. Plus, he's 36, 37. Penix, most players on a football team are in their 20s, early 20s, mid-20s. That's most of what an NFL roster is guys in their 20s. Mm-hmm. Penix is in their 20s. So, guys in their 20s do different things than guys that are 36, 37 that have families. Guys in their 20s are going out after games and practices and, playing video games and hanging out. Penix is going to be one of the guys. I don't know if Cousins is going to be one of the guys. That's an interesting dynamic. I know people thought when the Pats traded Jimmy G, that was a big reason where I was like, Jimmy G relates to these guys more than Brady does. He's kind of one of the guys more, where there's just an age thing more than anything. So that'll be an interesting dynamic in the locker room.
Well, and I kind of say it tongue in cheek, but when Fontenot makes the comment of if things work out and he's sitting 4 years, that's a good thing. That means everything's going right. But that also means you have to make a decision on a fifth year option without having seen this kid play. And he's going to be 28 years old at that point. Patrick Mahomes is 28 years old and he just won his third Super Bowl. Like, this is not normal. So, okay. Anyways, we've spent too much time on this already. It's just something that's really intriguing to me. To your point, Falcons win total sitting 9.5, -130 to win the NFC South, $3 favorite to make the postseason this year, although they have not done so in the last 7 years. Let's go to the NBA tonight. Two potential closeout games on deck. What's your favorite bet, I guess, of the night, whether it is in Bucks, Pacers, or 76ers, Knicks?
I will go my favorite bet, first half under Sixers, Knicks. I think it's 102.5 at DraftKings. I just think this is old school, old fashioned East Coast basketball, playoff basketball, especially later in a series. Especially later in a series where these teams are kind of worn down, players playing a bunch of minutes, just it's very physical. You can't call a foul on every play. And I just think we're going to see that, especially early, where it's going to be kind of a grinder of a game. So I like the first half under. I do think Philly wins. I just think this series feels kind of destined for seven, where these teams are pretty equal to each other. Even though the Knicks had it the other night, and boy, did they have it. That didn't feel like a five-game series. The games have been too close. These teams are too close in terms of competitiveness. I do think we're headed for a game seven. So I like Philly, and I do like the first half under. I don't think we've mentioned this. Did you see who the referee for this game is tonight?
Oh, no.
One Mr. Scott Foster, Scottish Foster, of the NBA referees.
Of course
of
it
all
is.
The guys, yes, of course. Of all the guys you'd want to extend a series, it is Scott Foster tonight. And let's just play conspiracy theory for a little bit. I know it's not David Stern's NBA anymore and Kings Lakers. We don't really get that anymore, but TV revenue is very important. We've had a lot of four-game series, a lot of five-game series. That hurts the league in their pocket. That hurts their wallets. wouldn't they love a game seven, same day as the Kentucky Derby? Wouldn't you like a Knicks Sixers game seven here? So again, I'm not going to bet it just because of that. I do think Philly wins the game anyway, but something to keep in mind where the league is very incentivized to have a seventh game in this series.
Well, it's interesting looking at your shot right now. I don't see a tinfoil hat. Is it underneath your desk? Where is it?
I got it over here. Yeah, I keep it just in case. Okay. I mean, is that a crazy thing to bring up, though? The fact that, hey, we've had a lot of short series, might like a little seven gamer.
I think that based on how close these games have been, we deserve it. I would love to see a game seven. I'm just not 100% sold that we're going to get it. I like where you're coming from. A lot of those angles do certainly make sense. I don't think I'm going to end up on Knicks money line, but I will probably end up taking the three here because I think that we do get another closely contested game. I think that the way things ended in that game in the Garden where you're up six with less than 30 seconds to go and you are not able to close that thing out, they're going to be coming back with a vengeance and a newfound energy here tonight, no matter how many tickets that the guy from Fanatics and Josh Harris try to sell to their fans to make sure that they don't have Knicks fans coming over too much. I just have a feeling that the Knicks are a little fed up with allowing this to happen. And Embiid is tired as all get out. And I know it's a great thing that the 76ers have Tyrese Maxey as the new face of the franchise and that he's got enough energy for everybody else on the court in the fourth quarter. But Joel Embiid's offensive performance last game was brutal. 9 turnovers, brutal. He is gassed and you can't trust him in those late game situations. And I said this earlier in the show, whereas I thought that the stamina was going to get better throughout the course of the series with him coming back from injury, it's been the total opposite in my mind, having watched this guy play.
All good points. He does run out of gas at the end of these games, but all these players, it's going to be who runs out of gas first, because Brunson is playing so many minutes. I mean, these are two old school coaches that just run their guys into the ground. And not only is Brunson playing pretty much every minute here, but there's so much on his plate where it's just give him the ball and get out of his way. Every play is designed for him. I mean, Maxey hits the three from the logo, and what an incredible shot that was. Most teams call timeout. They advance it. They drop a play. Nixon, you know what? Why call timeout? Why drop a play? We know we're giving it to Brunson anyway. It's just there's so much on his shoulders in these games where that's something to consider. But I just think Philly wins tonight, and I think we're looking at a very close seventh game. I've kind of felt that way throughout where, hey, once Knicks got up 3-1, I was like, wow, maybe I was wrong about this. But again, I just think this is destined for seven. It's interesting. The Knicks are a 2 seed, and if Philly was healthy all year, if Embiid was healthy, Philly probably would have been a 2 seed. So it's almost like a 2 seed versus a 2 seed in the first round. So sure. I do think we're headed for seven. Again, these teams are close. So if the Knicks won tonight, would I be shocked? Of course not. But I look for Philly to win. I think it'll be low scoring.
We haven't seen anything firm one way or another when it comes to Dame Lillard or Giannis Antetokounmpo in Bucks Pacers. That number's been all over the place, as high as 9, as low as 5. Pacers laying 6 right now at home. Total up from 212.5 this morning to 217, Will.
Yeah, and again, this isn't really a basketball bet. You're handicapping who you think's going to play out of Dame and Giannis. I have a feeling Giannis plays. I'm 50-50 on Lillard. Again, I have no information, but I'm just reading the tea leaves, reading the market where that line moved from 9 to 6. Somebody thinks he's playing, and it'd be interesting if they are ruled in, or at least Giannis is ruled in. Does this trickle down even further? It probably will get to 4 or 3 if we get Giannis in, maybe 4, something like that. So I lean towards the Bucks. I have a feeling it's playing. It's just very difficult to handicap this game without knowing who's playing.
I do think we get one of them. I don't know who it is, and that does lend me to the Bucks side of things. I already have a bet in this game, and it's not available anymore. Not that anyone would want to bet it anyways, because I'm a psychopath, but I did bet a same-game teaser in this one earlier this morning where I brought the Bucks up to 13.5 and over 208.5. I feel like the points are going to be scored there with the Pacers at home, and Bucks should keep it close enough with at least one of their top scorers in the league.
I could see it. I think Giannis is going to play. I have a feeling Giannis is going to play. Yeah, no information.
All right. We'll see how things plan out. Good luck to you tonight. Good luck, everybody at home. Enjoy the action, which, again, should be more competitive than whatever the heck we saw last night. Patrick Maher and Sharp Money's coming up next. Thanks, Will.